Sandoval against Chicago. Mr. Cronin.
May it please the Court, Thomas Cronin on behalf of Plaintiff Appellants Officers Juan Sandoval and Sidney Penix. The District Court granted the City's motion for summary judgment in this case, holding that Officers Sandoval and Penix failed to satisfy their initial...
Now, before we get into the merits, I'm wondering what this case is doing in federal court.
Your Honor, it's a our jurisdictional statement is that it is a final judgment of a case from the district court based...
I didn't ask what it's doing in the Court of Appeals. I'm asking what it's doing in federal court. The question, which neither side's brief discusses, is how federal jurisdiction is consistent with 38 U.S.C. 4323b2, which provides that actions of this kind must be filed in state court. We held in Velasquez against Frapwell that that decision, that that specification in the statute forecloses federal jurisdiction over suits of this kind.
Your Honor, that was, you're absolutely right. That wasn't addressed by either side and certainly was not addressed in the district court. This case is here under the presumption that the USERRA case set forth in our jurisdictional statement, which the city agreed to, gives rise to federal jurisdiction as a federal statute.
Well, one might think it ordinarily would come under the federal question jurisdiction, except for the terms of the statute I mentioned, which say that the case must be filed in state court. And our holding in Velasquez that statute means what it says.
Well, Your Honor, that would certainly be a dispositive to my argument if we're not here at all. I would contend, Your Honor, that federal jurisdiction was state jurisdiction was not exclusive, but that under USERRA...
That's the holding of Velasquez, that state jurisdiction over these kinds of claims is exclusive.
I won't argue with you, Your Honor. Our attendance here and in the district court and here was based on the federal question jurisdiction of USERRA. If that holding is an error and is not appropriate for me to be here.
Your brief cites 4323, the very statute that says that this suit must be filed in state court.
You know, I didn't read it that way, Your Honor. I thought that it gave great deference to the service members to come under either state or federal court. It's a very broad policy statute, USERRA, to give the benefit of that statute, the policy initiatives underlying that statute, to give protection to the service members in either federal court or state court. And we as the plaintiffs chose to bring this case in federal court. Based on that, Your Honor, I'll address the underlying arguments. In this situation, the district court granted the city's motion for summary judgment asserting that Sandoval and Penix failed to satisfy their initial burden to show discriminatory motivation in connection with the 2006 sergeant examinations and, in Officer Sandoval's case anyway, the 2003 field training officer, or FTO, examination. On appeal, our argument is twofold. One, that Officers Sandoval and Penix have adduced evidence of discriminatory motivation sufficient to preclude summary judgment. And at the very least, if you weren't persuaded of that point, the case shows that evidence demonstrates disparate impact sufficient that is a question that I believe has not been raised or at least has not been decided in this circuit. And we submit most respectfully that this could indeed or may indeed be the case where that could be decided. This is a USERRA discrimination case. Under Section 4311, a member of the armed forces shall not be denied any benefit of employment. And the USERRA goes on to define benefit of employment very, very broadly, including advantages, profits, privileges, opportunities, gains, status, interest, et cetera, et cetera. The district court held, and we certainly agree with that holding, and this is on the basis the district court denied the city's motion for summary judgment, was that a reasonable opportunity or accommodation to take a promotional examination or sit for a training class may indeed be a benefit of employment under USERRA. So the issue is, has Sandoval and Penix adduced sufficient evidence to show that their status as soldiers was a substantial or motivating factor in the denial of the employment benefit at issue, namely a reasonable opportunity to take their sergeant examination tests or to be promoted to the FTO in 2003. We submit that the Sandoval and Penix have met that initial burden, and that the district court was too narrow in articulating the standard for what officers Sandoval and Penix had to do. District court relied on the 11th Circuit case Kaufman to cite the well-settled statement that military status is a motivating factor if a defendant relies on, takes into account, considered or conditioned its decision on that consideration. But the district court did not include some of the qualifying language from Kaufman, which we think is particularly applicable here, which is the totality of evidence, the circumstantial evidence that must be considered. Specifically, Kaufman said that the court can infer discriminatory motivation from a variety of circumstances, including all sorts of different things, as well as inconsistencies between proffered reasons for conduct and the actual actions of the employers themselves.
Counsel, are both officers eligible for promotion to sergeant?
Yes, they are eligible for sergeant, yes, Your Honor.
Your complaint is it's the timing of the...
No, the complaint is not the timing so much, Your Honor, as the denial of the benefit of employment under USERRA by not providing them a reasonable opportunity to take that examination. The fact that they did indeed sit for the examination it doesn't moot the point that the reasonable opportunity to do so was denied them. They and the record is full of the evidence about how Officer Penix had to travel from Baghdad to.
I understand that, but what's the alternative that you suggest?
Well, the alternative we think Fink is very instructive, and the district court cited the Fink case, which is a district court case from New York. There, Fink held that it was wrong or it was discriminatory for the city there not to have provided a makeup test. Now, in this situation, the district court distinguished this situation from Fink because Officer Sandoval and Penix at no time specifically requested a makeup examination. We don't think that should be dispositive. The statute says very clearly no denial of benefit employment shall not be denied. It doesn't seem fair to us to read that statute by putting the burden on Officer Sandoval and Penix, who are military soldiers, you know, serving the country, to come up with the right lingo or say the right words to trigger the statute. This is very different than that a case that was decided here in 98 in this court with the application, the employment application, the McGuire case. There, the plaintiff never at all requested employment, reemployment whatsoever. This court affirmed that decision. That's not this case. Here, Sandoval and Penix, they're on service, they're at duty, they request an accommodation to take the examination. And the city says, well, we provided that accommodation to them. We sent them overseas, sent a test from overseas. They can get to the nearest Ernst & Young office to take that. We submit to Your Honor that that's not a reasonable chance to take the to take that examination when essentially you have to get from Baghdad to Frankfurt.
How are they harmed?
They're harmed, Your Honor, by the unreasonable burdens they had to incur.
One took the test in, I think, El Salvador.
He was in country in El Salvador. He had to get down to San Salvador, the city, to take it because Ernst & Young had an office there.
But he did have both of them had opportunities to take the test. So what are you seeking here? Some kind of damages because they had to.
USERRA first prevents us to seek injunctive relief. So we want injunctive relief that reasonable accommodations would be provided. But damages certainly are appropriate, and USERRA even provides for liquidated damages. Well, the damages that would flow from imposing on Sandoval and Penix the unreasonable burden of going from these hostile environments to get to San Salvador or Frank. It's frankly, it's no different than asking them to come back to Chicago. I mean, if you're going to get on a plane and go to Frankfurt, you might as well come back home. And another example is the FTO examination, and I know that's been much.
The court is an awful lot closer to Baghdad than Chicago.
Well, I know in terms of timing, but if you talk in terms of what the record facts were about what Officer Penix had to endure to get from Baghdad to Frankfurt, certainly it's shorter in miles, but it's certainly no easier in terms of the hardships that had to be endured by a soldier who's on duty during a war to get to Frankfurt. The record is full of that. And our point, Your Honor, was that there were sufficient facts to have carried our initial burden of demonstrating by circumstantial evidence discriminatory motivation in order to defeat summary judgment.
Did they object to going to the Ernst & Young offices?
No. They took the information that they had to get to the Ernst & Young office, and they did their best to get there. And that's the fact. Our point is that they shouldn't have had to endure those burdens in order to sit for a promotional examination.
Could the exam be administered by military personnel?
There's also, we had evidence in the record. The district court rejected it as hearsay, but we had evidence in the record that I think is relevant, where they were planning on doing that for another officer. There was evidence in the record that the sergeant in charge of this promotion test was going to make arrangements to get after this litigation was filed, the next round of tests to have it sent to a commanding officer. These are the kind of common sense solutions that we think USERRA, from a policy standpoint, imposes on the city to do something. They think their job is done if we say, well, we gave you what you asked for. Well, you wanted an overseas, you're overseas, we provided, get to a nursing young office, we're off the hook. Most respectfully, I don't think that's all that USERRA imposes. And I think the FTO examination is a perfect situation. Sandoval had an additional claim that he was improperly denied the first level of promotion, even before sergeant, to a field training officer.
Explain that, because I thought he received a $14,000
certainly did.
Payment. And was retroactively...
It certainly did, Your Honor. And the reason I bring it up is because we contend that that payment is evidence of discriminatory motivation. Let me see if I can explain. Sandoval says there were three requirements for becoming an FTO, and that is you take a test, you get an acceptable valuation, and you take a four-week training course. He satisfied everything but the four-week training course up to 2003. In 2003, he's overseas and can't sit for the examination. In 2005, another training class comes up. He can't sit for the examination again because he's overseas. In 2007, we filed this lawsuit saying, among other things, he was wrongly denied promotion to FTO. During the pendency of this lawsuit, he gets put in the training class, completes the training, and gets promoted in 2007 to FTO. And then a year later, in February 2008, they send him a check for back pay to 2003. Now, remember, in the litigation, the city has denied any obligation to Sandoval whatsoever. They say, listen, if he didn't satisfy the requirements, if he didn't take the training class, he doesn't get promoted. That's their proffered reason. He doesn't get promoted because he didn't take the test. And then their action is that, well, despite the fact that we have no obligation to do so, we're going to send him a check for back pay all the way to 2003. That's precisely the kind of difference that Kaufman, I think, suggested from the 4th District between the proffered reason for conduct and the actual action, which suggests, and the only difference was that he was on duty and couldn't attend the four-week training class.
The argument is that any time an employer goes beyond its statutory obligation, it therefore has a legal duty to go further?
No, I did. I'm not.
Or are you just arguing that all employers should take care never to give their employees one iota more than the statutory minimum?
Well, Your Honor, I'm not taking that position. My position is that...
It certainly sounded like your position.
Well, let me see if I can be clearer then. My position is that the fact that the city denied any obligation to Sandoval from 2003 onward until 2007 is their sworn statement in the litigation. They then send him a back paycheck all the way back to 2003 as if they had, because it was calculated back pay. And I don't think it was charity. I mean, I guess the point is that they say they have no obligation, and yet they pay him as if they did have an obligation because he missed the test. Missed the class because of military duty. The only fact in there is that he missed the class from military duty. That, in my opinion, is sufficient initial the carrying of initial our initial burden to demonstrate discriminatory animus. Our last point, Your Honor, was that based on the Miller case, which this court specifically said that the day may come when a disparate. My time is up, Your Honor. I'll rely on my briefs. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cronin. Ms. Masters.
May it please the Court. Let me begin by addressing your jurisdictional concern, Your Honor. After Velazquez, I believe the statute was amended by Congress to allow for jurisdiction in federal court, which is why we are here and agreed that plaintiff's jurisdictional statement was correct. Turning to the merits of this case.
Where's the amendment? I looked at the current version of 4323, and it looked like the old one. What am I missing?
Well, our understanding was that it was amended so that
it was amended after this court's first decision in Velazquez, and that's what led to the second one. Now there's an amendment effective October 10, 2008, according to this. There had been no amendment between 1998, which is what led to Velazquez, and October 10, 2008, which is, of course, long after this case was decided in the district court.
Right. Well, my recollection...
I'm staring at B, and at B2 says, in the case of an action against a state as an employer by a person, the action may be brought in a state court of competent jurisdiction in accordance with the laws of the state. B1 says, in the case of an action against a state as an employer or a private employer commenced by the United States, the district courts of the United States shall have jurisdiction over the action.
Well, but we're the city.
State is defined to include its subdivisions.
Right. I will take a look at that, but my recollection, having looked at that not too long ago, was that this court did have jurisdiction.
Well, I must say, if you were aware of Velazquez and this problem and ignored it in your brief, Mr. Cronin appears to be totally unaware of this. If you were aware of it and didn't bother to tell us that you thought there was a serious jurisdictional problem, that Congress had amended the statute, that we had to overrule one of our decisions, I'm very disappointed in the city of Chicago.
Yeah, Your Honor, what
every attorney has a duty to discuss jurisdictional issues, not to ignore them because you think you know the answer and therefore it doesn't matter whether you tell us.
And Your Honor, I take that to heart. What I'm saying to this court is, having recently litigated another USERRA case, it was my understanding that there absolutely wasn't a jurisdictional
problem.
It's fine
if that's your understanding, but you can't keep it to yourself. That's what I was complaining about. Right? Your brief just says, oh, well, there's obviously federal jurisdiction. Their statement is fine. Well, their statement is not fine. We have held there's no federal jurisdiction of this kind of suit. Now, maybe we should overrule Velazquez. Maybe the amendment in October 2008 requires us to do so. Although, as I say, I've just quoted the language in the current online version of the statute, and it's identical to the language that was at issue in Velazquez. So it doesn't look like this was the subsection that got amended.
Right. I will supply supplemental authority on that question to the court. Moving on to the merits of the case, however, this case involves two police officers who asked to take the 2006 Sergeant's Promotional Exam overseas and received what they requested. They suffered.
Counsel, do you have any idea how many Reserve and National Guard officers that are currently involved in active participation in Guards and Reserves are in the Chicago Police Force?
Your Honor, I do not. That's not in the record.
Ballpark figure?
No, I don't even have a ballpark figure. I think that's
simply... How often do these kind of problems come up?
This is the first case of which I'm aware. They suffered no injury. They received what they requested.
Well, the reason I asked that question was just a matter of curiosity. How does the city... Does the city have written policies on how they handle these cases where you have officers on military active duty military outside the country?
Your Honor... My recollection is that there was nothing written included in the record. What happened in this case, regardless of whether we have a written policy about it, is these particular plaintiffs both sent us emails saying,
You did what they asked.
Right,
they didn't complain
about
it. But my question is there a policy involved?
And as far as the record shows, our policy is based on the testimony of the people. The witnesses, our policy is to have people take the exam overseas. Whether there's a written policy, my recollection is that there's no written policy included in the record.
Well, the opposing counsel mentioned that at some point in the record it shows there was consideration given to having the exam administered by a commanding officer or somebody on the exam.
No, what opposing counsel is referring to is that in the course of one person's deposition, and I think it was Mr. Lewinowski or something to that effect, there was testimony and questions asked about whether a different police officer had asked if his commanding officer could administer the exam on base. And there wasn't a complete record, I believe, as to whether or not that was going to happen. But the fact of the matter is, in this case, these plaintiffs got what they asked for, which was to take the exam overseas. And indeed, Sergeant Officer Sandoval specifically said, I want to take it off base overseas. So to complain now in federal court that he was sent off base is a day late and a dollar short. In particular, they've suffered no injury. They are, as this court recognizes, still eligible for promotion. So there is no harm here that is cognizable by this court. Beyond the problem that they've suffered no injury, their lawsuit suffers from a fundamental problem that USERRA Section 4316 requires those on leave in the military to be treated the same as those on leave for other reasons. And they haven't shown that they were treated differently than those on leave for other reasons. In fact, the only thing this record shows is they got to take a test in a different location other than the city of Chicago when the city apparently has a policy of not letting anybody else on leave for any other reason do that. They've failed to adduce any evidence that the opportunity to take a promotional exam at a different time.
Do you know who paid for the transportation from Baghdad to Germany?
Your Honor, that's not in the record, but I have an answer from trial counsel if the court's curious, that it was not the city. It was apparently the military. We do know from the record because the plaintiffs were asked if they incurred any costs of travel.
Well, it would also be just a military hop where you wouldn't pay anything.
Right. I mean, the evidence from when the plaintiffs were asked in their depositions is that Officer Penix, had to apparently pay for some transportation within Frankfurt, which is no different than people who have to pay for transportation within Chicago. And I believe
Officer a military flight from Baghdad.
Right. He did. He caught a military flight. Officer Sandoval said his only expenses were apparently to buy lunch for people he was traveling with.
Let me come back to jurisdiction. It may be that the change made in October 2008 is a new definitional clause in subsection I, which now reads, in this section, the term private employer includes a political subdivision of a state. Is that what you're referring to?
Yes, Your Honor. I think Board does not.
So your argument then is that B3, which says that an action against a private employer can be brought in district court, now applies to Chicago. And you think that change took place October 10, 2008? We then have a question about retroactive application of that change.
Your Honor, I'm really going to have to go back and look at that and submit something supplemental to the court.
Public Law 110.389 looks like it. I mean, it looks like that's where it's coming from. And that statute was enacted after the district court's final judgment. So I think we need submissions from both sides on the jurisdictional question. We need to know how Velazquez applies in the world before this amendment. We need to know whether, as it seems from the online version of the code, subsection I was added in October 2008. And we then finally need to know what happens, what is the nature of the retroactive application of a jurisdiction-extending provision that is enacted after the district court has entered a final judgment. Okay? And we'll give the parties 10 days to file those supplemental jurisdictional memos.
Certainly. The other point we would make to this court regarding the merits is that these plaintiffs have received a benefit that no one else has received, and that providing veterans, those in the military, a benefit puts this case in the same category as this court's decision in Miller, where firefighters in military service receive 120 hours of paid leave when no one else does. And specifically in Miller, although in Miller, the court said it wasn't going to treat it wasn't a disparate impact case. The court recognized that when a benefit is provided to those in the military and to no one else, the question of disparate impact doesn't arise because military servicemen are receiving a benefit. And as compared to other people, they're actually, who aren't in the military, they're being treated more favorably. Further, as we point out in our brief, USERRA is not a reasonable accommodation statute. The words reasonable accommodation don't appear in it, and it is a statute that requires a showing of discriminatory motive. And that is conflicts with the idea that there could even be a reasonable accommodation claim under the statute. It's got to be one or the other, but it can't be both, and it's very clear from the language of USERRA, Section 4311, where a showing of motive is required, that this is a discriminatory treatment statute. Turning just briefly to Officer Sandoval's FTO claim, that claim was waived because the district court held that his claim was moot by the provision of back pay that wasn't even raised in his opening brief, and we waited. The reason he is not given his back pay until 2007-2008 is because we wait till he completes the training. He is out of town every time we offer training. The first time he is available for training, he takes the training, and then he receives his back pay, and he is promoted. For the reasons set forth here today and in our brief, and for those we will provide the court on the jurisdictional statement, we request that the decision of the circuit of the district court be affirmed. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. Mr. Cronin, you've probably got about 30 seconds.
30 seconds, Your Honor. First of all, I'll avail myself of the opportunity to submit the jurisdictional statement. Judicial brief, I appreciate that. Two quick questions. Policies are attached. Exhibit B to our brief includes our second.
The activity issue, by the way, may not be right. I found a different version of this in an earlier version of the code, so something like this may have been lurking. You'll need to track down, and if subsections I and J have changed, but when this entered the code, you'll need to track down, I think.
I will do so, Your Honor.
Policies
are attached to our brief is our Second Amendment complaint, which sets forth the city policies in general. The topic about Sergeant Lewandowski's effort to get a test to the commanding officer for an officer named Flanagan was addressed in the district court brief at footnote 4 on page 13. It is part of the record that that's what the city had tried to do in a different instance. Lastly, there is costs of travel and other costs that damage is suffered by the by the plaintiffs in the record. And
incidentally, the cost of traveling, let's say in Frankfurt or wherever the test was given, compared to catching a flight from Baghdad to.
We contend that the costs are more than just his out-of-pocket costs. Having to endure the hardships that were endured are significant and are predictable, are coming on. The importance of the jurisdictional issue is tantamount because I personally have filed two other cases pending, both in this court and in the district court. Thank you for your time.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement.